Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, it is that time again for Elder Scrolls lore, and we've been going through the creation stories and little bits about the deities that the different groups across Tamriel worship and how they think everything came into being, and we've gone through the majority of the kind of the major ones, some of the weird ones, but now it's time to zoom in to a small little group of some dangerous people who live out in the, well, some of the most dangerous parts of Tamriel, up in the cold parts of Skyrim where nobody else wants to live because life is hard up there. And because life is hard, they've got kind of a different perspective on everything. That's right.
They've got a pretty hard view on life.
A hard view on life. That's right. We're talking about the Reachmen and what the Reachmen worship or who they worship and the sources of information for that. And so Lotus is back with me. I'm Tom, of course. And Lotus, are you excited about talk about the gods of the Reach folk?
Yeah, I think this one's going to be kind of interesting because we were kind of talking beforehand about like, oh, you know, is there any that are worth kind of discussing before closing up? Because as you'll notice, we haven't talked about every single race because, well, the Banished races are similar enough that they don't each deserve their own episode. Like, I feel like that would kind of just be like, okay, well, we're discussing mostly the same stuff in a lot of aspects with like one or two differences here or there. Same with a lot of the, you know, you got the merge races too. Similar situation. We're not going just like, hey, we're going to do every race just because it checks them all off. Mm-hmm. We're going for ones that have enough of a difference that we feel we can make a, you know, a decent discussion out of. And, this is ironically another Banished race, but one that I feel not as common and also kind of been delved into more recently.
Well,
not quite as long standing as some of the other ones.
Right. Yeah. Skyrim and then expansion stuff from ESO.
Right.
Have given us more of
ironically, very, very established and older race, just less disgusting game.
Yeah. And more of like a tribal group, less of a race.
Yes.
More of a tribal group.
For sure.
Probably the same way that like the Khymer were considered to be Altmer that left the rest of the Altmer and then kind of established their own group. So they weren't really their own race until things changed. And then, of course, they become the Dunmer. And then as time went on, they became more and more of a distinct race than they initially were at first.
And also, this seemed like it was different enough that we should definitely cover this one next.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and also
unique enough.
Speaking of the Dunmer worshiping Daedra. This is one of those things. We get these spin-off groups. This is a spin-off group of like Needs and or Nords who have turned into Reachmen, Reach folk over time. And you could talk about like the Aeliads or the Khymer or the Dwemer or some of these offshoot elf groups as being these groups that moved away over time. And in the case with the Khymer and the I was going to say Dwemer, but not the Dwemer. The Aeliads, that's who. They end up worshiping Daedric princes rather than Aedra. And that becomes a thing, right? Like, that's something that they're very known for. It's something that totally guides and sometimes is the doom of their culture when it talk about the Aeliads. But the Reachmen are kind of similar in that they're not all about the Aedra like everyone else. They'd rather worship the Daedric princes.
Exactly. And in this series, I mean, oftentimes you'll see Daedra kind of related to being like demons or evil or whatever, but that's, as with everything in the series, that's not really exactly black and white like that. So again, there are incentives for, you know, whether they're selfish or not, there's incentives for races and groups to actually align with Daedra. And
or at least they believe there are. Or maybe there are temporary short-term benefits, say, and then long-term problems are,
suppose, on.
Right.
But you could also argue the same thing with Daedra when you really look at
it's true. Little
of a response you get sometimes.
Yeah, it's not all cut and dry. And in order to dig into the Reachmen, we have found a series of books that were added to Elder Scrolls in the Elder Scrolls Online when they expanded into Markarth. This is from, 7 years ago at this point? Has it been 7 years? So 7 years ago, I think. I'm pretty sure. You can double check that if you want.
No, 5 years.
5 years. Okay.
Yes, because it was right at it was like 2020.
Okay, so.
So yeah, we're relatively year five recent. Going into, yeah, so we're 5 years in from this one.
Yeah, and so as we've been going through these other different documents and things from in the game. And just to give people a refresher, or if you're new here, welcome. We are going back to the source books from the games and seeing what they say and understanding from the books what to take from it. We're not reading through and projecting our own interpretations onto just the games in general. We're actually pulling sources here. And one of the things to do when you pull a source is to understand both who wrote the source, but also from a meta perspective, who wrote the source, right? So in our world, because it's a video game, surprise, sorry, spoilers, these documents, this is called The Great Spirits of the Reach, Volumes 1 through 5, and these were written by Leman Tuttle and Andrew Young. These are two people who have worked on the series for a while. Leman Tuttle used to be the lore master of ESO.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a lot of fun chatting with him when we were in Vegas that year, actually.
Yes, yes, and very much has a philosophy background. There's some of the things he writes come across to me like a philosophical treatise, that kind of thing. And he gets into the nitty-gritty in different ways that different writers did. He's not as out there as somebody like Kirkbride. He feels more like somebody who has kind of a very strong sense of who these groups are and wants to flesh that out for each of us by either, you know, the events of ESO or the documents that he writes in the games and those kinds of things. In World, this is written by Vashu Gramorga, Chief Daedra Theologist. Daedra Theologist, that's such a good title. Can I be a Daedra Theologist?
I just like that word.
Yeah, so Daedra Theologist, the theology of Daedra, right? Like, you guys know what that means. At the University of Gwilym, Discourse on Aedric Faiths in Tamriel. This is the first volume. There's five. This is fairly long, so I'm going to read through each of these, and like we do in the past, we'll pick these apart. I'll probably read through bigger chunks before I take pauses, just to make sure we get through it all.
This definitely, for sure, is there's a lot to cover here, but as we discussed before the show started, it's, I think, better to keep it condensed to one episode if we can.
Right. So here, let's get right into it in order to get through all of this, because there's five volumes. The first two are the longest. The last three are a little bit shorter. But here it says, most residents of Tamriel profess some variety of faith in a world beset by danger, both conventional and cosmic. Rejecting deities out of hand is a failing proposition. Right from the start, he's like, these things are real, they're alive, and so people have to, it's very hard for people to be atheists in a world where, like, godlike beings reach down into reality on a regular basis, right?
Right. I also like the fact that in this series, oftentimes you have, like, you know, it's hard, a lot of stuff is done on faith in our world, whereas in this, it's like, well, yeah, you can have faith, but it's like, also these beings just show up from time to time and run right. Amok.
Yeah, you don't need a whole lot of faith when one can just portal into your living room and tell you, I need you to do this, mortal. You know, correct. It's like, okay, yeah, I guess you're real.
Yeah, it's a little less ambiguous.
Let's keep going. Unfortunately, this shared desire for religious identity rarely brings people together. Instead, it commonly drives us apart. Many of the fault lines are predictable. Racial politics, historical enmities, the claims of divine sanction routinely undercut an attempt at a good faith dialogue. But one central rift underpins all of it: the perceived supremacy of the Aedra. This is basically him saying, like we did at the intro, most of the major groups worship the Aedra, maybe not all of them, but groups of them in different combinations. And the Aedra generally make up the majority of the godlike beings that they worship. Even if you are, say, the Khajiit and every, you know, you kind of bring in some Daedric princes, for the most part, it's mostly Aedra. So it goes on and says, do you want anything you want to add there?
Or should I keep going? No, for sure. It's just, you know, that again, you'll often see a little bit of a mix, but more often than not, you're wanting to deal with, it's less problematic to deal with Aedra than it is with Daedra.
Yes. Yes. All right. So it goes on and says, an old Orcish proverb reads, conquerors name the wars, an apt description of how those in power shape our understanding of history. But this proverb is doubly true when it comes to matters of faith. Conquerors do more than name wars. They shape beliefs. If we accept the premise that those who hold the White Gold Tower hold Tamriel in some fundamental sense, the primacy of Aedra makes perfect sense, not because they are in fact superior, but because those in a position of supremacy insist that they are. This is a reference to, in the later eras, the Empire, the Mannish Empire, holding the White Gold Tower, defining for the majority of the rest of the continent what they should worship and why. But in the past, that was Aeliads. In the past, it was the Aeliads were an Altmer offshoot. The White Gold Tower is right in the center of Cyrodiil, and it is this important building. It defines everything that's happening on the continent across all of these different cultures.
Right, and just like in real life, the victor is the one who has to write the record books to keep history. So, you know, that's a very strong parallel to real life.
Absolutely. With a few notable exceptions, the story of Cyrodiil, and thus Tamriel writ large, have been shaped by those professing Aedric faiths. It began with the Aldmer and passed to the Aeliads, and while the Wild Elves, meaning the Aeliads, flirted with Daedra worship for a time, they paid a high price for it at the hands of the Alessians. This is the Alessian Rebellion that happened in the kind of began the first era after the Mirithic period. From that point forward, the Aedra enjoyed special status in the realm of Tamrielic faith, a status that by definition diminished the standing of those races who cleaved to non-Aedric practice. Most of these races already suffered scorn and abuse at the hands of men and elves. This would include orcs, Argonians, and Khajiit, while others were regarded with cruel suspicion for their elven kin, or by their elven kin, the Khymer and later the Dunmer. All these people suffered and still suffer the privileged award to Aedra worshippers. So the privilege awarded to Aedra worshippers. And then one last sentence, but no race has suffered more abuse on the basis of their faith than the people of the Reach. Now, this is getting to the real point here. This is about the Reachmen. But like I stated at the beginning, it's drawing these parallels. You have the majority of the men and elves who believe in Aedra, but the offshoots don't. Orcs, Argonians, Khajiit, or at least some of those believe in Daedric princes more than Aedra, or they're mixed in with their pantheons, or they've got Hist trees, which are completely different.
Totally different.
And then the Khymer and the Dunmer, similarly worshiping Aedra. And then eventually the Tribunal, but still not Aedra, Daedric princes. Did I say Aedra? I'm a Daedric princess. But then now we're getting to the Reach, right?
Aedric princes?
Aedric princes. Why don't we call the Aedra Aedric princes? We just call Daedric princes. I don't know.
Yeah.
despite being bullied, scorned, and repeatedly invaded by foreign aggressors, the Reach folk have managed to retain a rich Daedra-worshipping culture that shows no signs of dilution or retreat. It is my sincerest hope that this treatise will shed new light on this underappreciated faith and inspire a greater respect for the proud and hardy people of the Reach. Now, we have to remember, this was a document that was added to Elder Scrolls Online. This does not mean that this is a perspective from the fourth era of the world, the time of Skyrim.
We're discussing second era currently.
Right, this is second era. This is during that time period where, heck, they had taken over the throne at one point in the history. Like, these are the kinds of things that are happening with the Reach folk. And I have a feeling that the version of the Reach folk that we get in Skyrim are kind of just the people who have survived long enough to still be in Skyrim by the fourth era.
Right. I mean, that's a decent amount of time that's passed in between these, between this documentation and what we're dealing with in The Elder Scrolls V.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's move on to volume two. This is where it starts to get good. The Reach folk worship many spirits, both great and small. In truth, there are as many faiths as there are clans in the Reach. Some clans might worship a sacred elk or the spirit of a mountain spring. Others might sacrifice goats to ghosts of ancient heroes. There are some spirits, however, that transcend clan boundaries. Those we in the West of Tamriel recognize as the Daedric princes. So this is something to note here. First of all, the different Reachmen groups are not unified. They've lots of tribes. Some of them are more powerful than others.
Tribalistic.
Yeah, but there is not a unified, defined religion. That means that many of them can worship whatever they want. If they want to worship the ghost of an ancient hero, they can do that. If they have some special spring that seems to heal them and revive them, then maybe there's a spirit in the spring and they worship the spirit in the spring. But what seems to be common across almost all of them is the worship of Daedric princes. So any thoughts on that one, Lotus?
As I say, including our very own friend of the show, Hercene.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Is Hercene here? Did he make the live stream? We're doing it a little bit later tonight.
Off of our usual live schedule, but yeah. Don't think so. But remiss to not shout out to Hercene. But yeah, no, it's just, again, it's interesting because this isn't one unified document in a way that you would see with some of these others that kind of almost want to have an empire where it's like, no, well, it's us versus them. This is just kind of like, yep, this is all of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of like leave us alone in some aspects.
They're very, very tribal, and they're very about this is what we believe, and that has none of your business. This is what we want. This is what we believe. Leave us alone.
Right. It doesn't even all align with each other.
Right. Absolutely. Also, we have to remember that this document is by Vashu Gramorga. That's an orc name. This is probably not a Reachman. This is somebody who works at the university who studies Daedra.
Right.
By connection, the Reach folk and their different beliefs and different tribes. So this comes from an outside perspective, trying to understand what it is they're doing and put it into academic terms, which is nothing that any of the Reach folk would ever do on their own.
Exactly. And we've kind of encountered this already where it's sometimes, you know, you get some of the influence of the writer explaining the situation, which might not necessarily be the intent of what should be done if you're trying to do it truly objectively.
Right, right. The writer meaning in-universe, the in-universe
Yes,
writer.
In-universe writer, yes. Right. It's weird, but fourth wall breaking of the series.
Yes, right. All right, let's keep going. Chief among the Reach Pantheon is Hercene, Prince of the Hunt. Names vary from clan to clan. Old Elk Eye, Hunt King, Beast Father, Skin Shaper, and the Spear with 5 points. Now, the Spear with 5 points is a reference to the Spear of Bitter Mercy, Hercene's weapon, which originally was Mehrunes Dagon's, but then kind of got taken over.
Some of the Daedric artifacts get traded around a bit. If you check out the Daedric artifacts episode, we go into all of these weird artifacts.
Right, right. But that's the Spear of 5 points is a reference to Hercene specifically, but also shows that they know what that is. They've probably been blessed with that before. In skin changing, obviously, they know what that is. So it'll get more into that in a little bit. Like all Reach gods, Hercene is regarded as a cruel teacher. Now, keep that in mind. Cruel teacher. Indeed, Reach folk do not call their articles of faith beliefs. They call them lessons. But those who heed Hercene's lessons grow swift, strong, and cunning. For a Reach hunter, these physical manifestations of faith are far more important than any of the nebulous ethical concerns debated in the temples of the divines. So this gives us our first real glimpse into why they worship the Daedric princes, and it's because they teach them lessons. The hardships make them hardier, make them stronger, allow them to survive in dangerous places where they have to live. This is what their life is about.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, this is what their life is about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like when you need to justify why your life is so hard, you try to sometimes give it meaning. And this is a situation that you actually see a lot with the Dunmer, too, where it's just like, man, life is hard. You know what? This is probably testing us because life can't just be miserable all the time for us without a reason.
Yeah. And it creates kind of a light at the end of the tunnel. We know things are hard. We know the gods have made life hard. But if we can surmount these things, then there's something on the other side. Then we're given some sort of reward, even if that reward is simply being stronger and hardier and able to face the difficulties of life. that's enough. That keeps right. you alive.
That is an award.
That is, yeah, that's a lesson. Right. That is a reward. That is a lesson, right? Hersin is the avatar of the fierce and terrifying, and this is in quotes, now. He tells his followers that life is lived breath by breath, and all creatures are predator, prey, or both. This engenders a sense of urgency and constant wariness that often leads to conflict, but also keeps Reach Folk safe. In the heart of a Hersin worshiper, there is no rest and no expectation of rest. This gives me the sense that they're constantly living in the moment, because that is what is most important.
Well, yeah, if you're living breath to breath, you're not thinking about things in the long run, which is ironically, like, again, it's kind of just interesting to see parallels from one culture to another, which is very similar to Argonians not really caring about their history and longevity. It's just kind of like, yeah, it is what it is. When stuff breaks down, it's just gone forever. This is very much like, look, just mm-hmm. do what you got to stay alive. You don't need to worry about that other stuff right now.
Yeah, and this is another one of those parallels to the real world. People who live in more dangerous or poorer environments tend to be focused more on the here and now, what they can do now. What can I get now? How can I enjoy my life now? If I get money, what do I spend it on now? Because it may not last. Everything becomes very short-term focused. And yes, like this states, sometimes that creates problems in the long term that can create conflicts and things that make things harder. But in the short term, that's what really matters, because there's no guarantee that you will wake up tomorrow.
Right. So you're just running around YOLOing everything.
Yeah, just YOLO everything, which makes sense for why they would worship the Daedra, because the Daedra show up. The Aedra rarely respond to any prayers. They're very quiet. They don't seem to react. And even if maybe worshiping him in the long term has better benefits, there's no proof. The Daedra are here now.
Exactly. It might be better to just like, hey, maybe we should work with them just because we won't get murdered.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. For the uninitiated, such a faith sounds exhausting, but the fruits it bears are difficult to dismiss. Reach folk maintain a level of focus and athleticism that few races can match. While brief stillness waits at the end of the hunt, there is always another hunt on the horizon. So this is talking about how there's no rest, but there's brief stillness at the end of the hunt. But Hersin doesn't give you too long to rest before, oh, now there's another hunt. You got to get out there. You got to keep going. And so is life living in the Reach, where things are cold, the rocks are harsh, food is limited, shelter is difficult. All of these things lead to very little rest, where you constantly have to keep going in order to stay alive. So
sounds exhausting.
Yeah. The final paragraph on volume two is this: Reach folk also welcome Hersin's truest servants into their midst as protectors and guides. This is the part I was saying was coming. I speak, of course, of werewolves. Few Reach folk describe lycanthropy as a blessing, but they accept it as a useful condition. The werewolf suffers on behalf of her clan and causes enemies to suffer in turn. So among the Reach folk, if you are a werewolf and people find out, it doesn't mean you get shunned from the tribe. You don't get kicked out. If anything, they go, oh, good. Now we have a better weapon to combat our enemies with.
Right. It's like, well, again, one of those things, you become, sounds super mean, but it's not, you become a tool to that tribe.
You're such a tool.
You're such a tool.
The Reachmen are all tools.
We need to wear something.
Somebody's going to write us on this one. Reachmen aren't tools. I like the Reachmen.
They can be very useful tools in this situation. Hey, I'm almost always a werewolf in game, or a wereboar, or a were something.
Were dolphin?
Yeah.
Were sharks. Were sharks show up in the lore, right?
Isn't that the thing? Were sharks. Were dolphins. Were crocodiles. Yeah. A were shark sounds truly god awful.
Yeah. I guess if you were like a Maomer and you were a were shark, that could work out.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Or yeah. Slowed.
A slowed were shark would be the fattest, slowest shark in the ocean.
Yeah. All right. We'll just move past that one.
I bet there's art somewhere on the internet of a were slowed. Like a were shark's load.
I hope there isn't.
if you know of some, send it to Lotus.
No.
Lotus on Discord. You're like, no, don't.
My inbox is going to be ruined.
Don't do it. Don't do it. I bet somebody can just create one for you if you need it. Anyway, we'll just leave that where it is. Let's move on to volume three. This is where it gets into other Danger Princes. Hersine is at the top. That's clearly the one they worship the most. It's the one that where you, especially in Skyrim, when you're running around and you see like the, you know, the heads and the antlers of like deer and things like that.
Skyrim, they even dress to like honor Hersine. It's not even subtle.
Yeah, it's not subtle at all. All of those are like religious ornamentation for their god. All right. Volume three, Reach Folk recognize only two worlds. The world of flesh and the world of spirit. While Hersine reigns supreme in the world of flesh, Namira, the spirit queen, rules over the infinite realm of spirit. Okay, so we have the world of flesh run by, according to them, ruled over by the Lord of the Hunt, which is why life is so difficult and hunting is so important. But then there's that dualism. There's the spirit, and the spirit world is completely controlled by the Daedric Prince, who is the closest to the void and may actually be even part of the void. Who knows? We've speculated about this in other episodes. Go check those out. This is creepy stuff, because this is the spirit world, right? Like, this is this thing that's kind of underlying reality, and it's run by Namira.
Right, which is an unsettling person to have running your spirit realm.
Yes. Yeah. Talk about creepy nightmare fuel types of stuff. Here it keeps going. Even among Daedric worshippers, Namira is usually regarded with fear and suspicion. That's what you basically just said.
What are the odds?
Her traditional sphere of influence inspires instant revulsion in mortals. Chilling mysteries and the inevitability of decay lie at the very heart of most mortal fears. But in the Reach, her dominion extends far beyond mere slugs and darkness. Notice the inclusion of slugs there. I wonder if that is a Slowed kind of reference. Because I feel like the Slowed worship Namira. I feel like that totally tracks, right?
They seem like they would at least get along at bare minimum.
Yeah. I mean, it's all creepy, weird stuff. So sure. Reach folk see Namira as the avatar of all primal dualisms. Life and death, beginnings and endings, possibility and entropy, all fundamentally competing forces that flow from her realm of spirit. While most religions strive for some sense of harmony, Reach theology is inextricably linked with conflicts like these. This obsession with conflict as an essential force of existence no doubt plays a role in their belligerent attitude toward outsiders and each other. This reminds me, Lotus, of some of the stuff Vivek would talk about how like violence is necessary if you are looking to
enact peace, like
yes, or achieve chim or mantle, right. Like the concept of violence is inherent to the natural world, and violence is conflict, and so the natural sense that this duality is in conflict with itself is somehow actually like a common theme among different groups. It's not super common, but it's something that comes up. It's not a surprise.
Right. And it's almost integral to life itself.
Right. Yes. Yes. Which would make sense for the Reach folk, because they live such hard lives. So it's just natural for them to see that as a thing that's not a contradiction. It's just how life is. At the end of this, it says, paradoxically, most Reach folk do find some measure of peace in Namira's teachings. Clan witches often describe Namira as one who gives and takes, giving life and taking life until the spirit finds deep wisdom. And that has kind of that sense of overcoming difficulty. Things give life, things take life. That's just the way the world is. But in that struggle and in that sadness, and you can develop wisdom. It actually makes you wiser, the same way that Hersine would make you stronger through physical difficulties.
Right.
So that's volume three. Volume four extends this into some of the other Daedric princes. Now, who would you expect to be in this list, Lotus? Are there certain ones that you're like, oh, I think they'd probably worship this one or that one or whatever?
I mean, the Hersine tie-in is pretty obvious, but like, there's a lot of situations related to this where it's like some of the Dayduke princes you can definitely see clicking more than others. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's just it. Like, I don't think, as much as I love me some Hermaeus Mora, doesn't really fit as well in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And yet, if I had mentioned Namira before we read the Namira section, you probably would have been like, wait, they worship Namira? Why would that make sense for the Reach Folk? But it does. Just like Periite, which again feels like, okay, pestilence and disease, like, how does that make sense? Why would you worship that? But here, let's get into it. Reach Folk place great emphasis on natural rhythms and the pitiless march of time.
And that's the thing that is so interesting, because it's an underplayed aspect of Periite. Is Periite's the taskmaster. It's not just, oh, by the way, here's the sniffles. It's, it's by the way, make sure to get your calendar set for the next 7 years.
Right. And there's some really cool, I won't spoil it. We'll get to it. There's some really cool stuff in here that makes you go, oh, maybe that's why Periite is a dragon in iconography and things like that. So here, we'll get into it. Everything that exists will pass. The fort that rises too high will fall. The clan that starves will one day grow strong. This eternal balance is the work of Periite. Things naturally change. Things naturally grow. Things naturally decay. Periite is involved with all of that, according to them. This is the work of Periite, the master of tasks and lord of order. This is the way they see it. In many ways, Periite serves as a vital foil to the primacy of conflict. Let me read that again. In many ways, Periite serves as a vital foil to the primacy of conflict, because the things that Periite seems to do work in rhythms and patterns. They're not broken apart and in conflicted in any way. They're just the natural rhythms of the way existence works. While wars and plagues may inflict grievous wounds, the Taskmaster ensures that the world always returns to its natural and intended state. Now, Lotus, this gives me that perspective of, even when worshiping somebody as terrifying as Namira or as unpredictable as Hersine, Periite is the thing that brings this all together and makes it feel like it's part of this natural cycle, which kind of
like a grander plan.
Yeah, it kind of solves the conflict and the division and the contradictions, because those very things, when you zoom out, become part of a greater pattern and they start to make sense. That's kind of my sense of it, I guess.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Yeah, no, for sure. And the other thing that I do kind of find interesting, because you can tie in both aspects of Periite with this situation, you've got the whole Taskmaster thing, which I feel is much more relevant. But it is funny, because when they were talking about, you know, what basically, just because you're on top now doesn't mean you're going to always be on top. And what's the number one way to crumble an empire? You have like a massive disease outbreak, and it's okay, and rips, like that's right. The end of that. Like,
an army cannot
fight
that.
Another group comes in, and like, exactly. So stuff like that is very interesting, because both aspects tie in to kind of forcibly maintaining that rhythm.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Like, you can't fight a disease with an army. It doesn't work.
Right. It doesn't work. Like, yeah, I was going to say, no matter how well equipped you are, if you all get the plague, that's not great.
Oh, no, they're going to invade our land. Well, mount a response and let's defend our land. But when it's a disease, that's not how that works. Here, let's keep going. As is the case with most cultures, Reach Folk associate Periite with blights and disease. But unlike other people, Reach Folk see no malevolence in illness. Quite the contrary. Lives extinguished by disease make room for healthier, more vibrant Reach Folk to take their place. Like wildfires, this is the first thing that comes to mind when I was reading this, like wildfires, diseases serve as a revitalizing force of nature, a necessary check on the hazards of abundance. It's the wildfires that keep the forest from overgrowing, and then it's the ash from the fires that fertilize the ground, which allow new trees to grow. In their minds, Periite is just like that. Beings grow, but beings all have to die and decay. They all, disease is what keeps the population in check, which allows for more people to be born and to grow and to move on.
And funny enough, that's the thing I think of, just like, you know, if you're burning forest down, that's very, you know, tie into the other Daedric princes who all kind of like loop into each other. That is such a Dagon thing where it's just like, look, you can't have something grow fresh if you don't blow up the old thing.
That's true. Yeah, it's very similar to Mavren's Dagon and yep. Some of the assumption about his, or not assumption, but some of the evidence for why he's important as being the thing that ends the Kelpa, the thing that yes. ends the current existence yep. of the world and ushers in the next. All right, final paragraph on volume 4, it says, I should note that Periite's role in Reach society mimics that, and this is where it gets really cool, that of Akatosh and Adric faiths in many crucial ways. Let me say that again. Periite's role in Reach society mimics Akatosh, the dragon god of time. What? How does that work? Well, check this out. Associations with time, rigid natural order, draconic imagery, and so on lead me to believe that some cultural cross-pollination may have occurred during the early interactions of man and Myr in northwestern Tamriel, a heretical but fascinating thought. So this does a few things. Before we get to the details about what's similar between Akatosh and Periite, let's talk about the fact that this is a document, an in-lore, in-world document that shows that characters in this world understand that there can be cross-pollination of ideas and beliefs and the way that they interpret who their godlike beings are. Period. So when we
That's
see,
neat.
Yeah, so it's really neat because when we see similarities between the way the Khajiit view these and the way that the Imperials or the Myr view these different beings, and we see similarities and connections, and then some parts are different and some parts are the same, that can all be explained by cross-pollination. Over time, they mixed ideas and they blended ideas. This is another real thing that happens in the real world. Go back mm-hmm. and study ancient Greece and ancient Egypt and the Babylonian gods and these things. There is cross-pollination between all of those groups because they were trading with each other, and ideas right. would inform the way that they would view their own gods. And that was just the way it was. And if you go back to an earlier time, you see different beliefs, and you go a little bit closer to the current period and when they were still being worshipped, and you see variations and the way that their perspectives on their own gods changed because they're like, oh, well, our god's a lot like their god and their god does this, so now our god does that too. A lot of that stuff works that way. So do you, Lotus, do you see the connection here between Akatosh and Periite, not just in the fact that they're both dragons?
I really like the parallel that they have, especially because when you want to think of like things that are very, very rigid in an order, hard to really argue too much. It's like, man, time is like literally the definition of like, well, yes, you order things so frequently, like our schedules on a daily basis, the way, you know, we track things, it's like it's all done through time. And it's kind of interesting that like the taskmaster, all these little mundane tasks are then, oh, well, actually, yeah, you know what? This does tie into time itself, which our time god is a dragon and what's considered a pretty major force, whereas Periite's kind of like the most dunked on of all of the Daedric princes, I would say.
Yeah, he's probably on the list of most. Yeah, yeah. I'll give you that.
But that's because a lot of times, like, and I mean, saying like, oh, by the way, I'm like a really good organizer isn't exactly like all that threatening compared to like, oh, by the way, you know, I can blow up the entire existence of the world. That's yeah. a little more intimidating sounding.
I manage time itself is a little different than I organize things and keep things
right
in
but
moving.
At the same time, if you yeah. want to get like weird with it, like you know, it's a water itself is, you know, something that you generally we can walk through, push our way through, swim in, everything like that, but you have water run across something for a long enough period of time and it'll wear it away. So
yeah, right,
you know.
Right. Yeah, it seems soft and easy to move, but in different, like a flood is a terrifying thing.
Correct.
Like, the faucet dripping, not so terrifying, unless it's like on your head for weeks at a time, and it becomes terrifying also. But yeah, there's similarities here. Akatosh may be, according to what we understand, the actual foundation of time itself, but that doesn't mean that Periyai doesn't feel, especially from their perspective, like a more real version of time, a being that actually exists. And well, I mean, Akatosh actually exists, but it interacts with the world, who then helps them understand the ordering of things, then the tasks and the cycles of life, birth and death and decay, all of these things all kind of consumed by time in that order. So it makes sense that they would see a similarity, or at least this writer would see a similarity between those things, and that in Reach Society, they don't need Akatosh, they have Periyai. It's a very similar kind of place, even though from a, if you zoom out and you go, okay, well, Akatosh seems more powerful than Periyai, according to what we know on kind of a grander scale, it doesn't matter to the Reach folk. That's not what matters. What matters is what happens now. And Periyai can show up in my living room or spread a disease in my camp. What the heck has Akatosh ever done? And yeah, sure. Yeah. Maybe you get an aspect of Akatosh fighting to to save Oblivion at the end of Oblivion. But the Reach folk don't care about that, because that's like a once in an era sort of thing. This isn't like a regular occurrence. So, all right, let's move on to volume 5. This is the final one. This is where it kind of wraps it up and kind of buttons up some other things.
Yeah, concludes in a way.
Now, the Reach folk don't only worship Daedric princes. There is one being who isn't a Daedric prince who they do worship, but it's not a typical Aedra either. Let's get into it. Scholars often dismiss Reach theology as simple Daedra worship, but the great spirits of the Reach folk extend beyond the princes of Oblivion. Like many human cultures, people of the Reach venerate Lorkhan as well. They know him as Lork, L-O-R-K-H, the spirit of man, the mortal spirit, or the sower of flesh. That was my... I was going to make a joke that was my high school nickname.
That was my college nickname.
Nobody should be a sower of flesh. That's just shouldn't happen.
Ever. Nobody should have that as a nickname, period.
But here, let's get a little bit more into it before we break it down. According to Reach myths, Lork convinced the spirit queen Namira to grant him a place in the infinite void where he could create a realm for wayward spirits. This seems similar to some of the creation myths we talked about that were trying to justify who Lorkhan was, or Lorkhan's parallel, according to, say, the Yukunan myths or whoever, and what that trickster kind of deity did. In some of those myths, he goes to the void, learns things, and comes back. Namira seems like a representative of the void, has some sort of void-like thing going on, or maybe even is the void. And so the connection between those two makes sense, because we see parallels in other theologies about that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Rather than a vibrant paradise, Lork created a hard and painful place, a realm that taught through suffering. They are talking right here about the Mundus. This is what they're talking about. They're talking about existence in the world on Tamriel, because this is suffering. According to the Reachmen, and probably most people, we joke about this all the time, about how if you actually lived there, it would be terrifying. But
it's a horrible place.
Yeah, but this was like, according to plan, this is what Lorkhan wanted the world to be like, according to this perspective. While some resent Lork's cruelty, most praise his wisdom. According to the Reachfolk, those who suffer most know best. Remember, it's through the suffering and the conflict that you become stronger and wiser. Hardship is a means to glory and wisdom, and Lork provides hardship in ample supply. So Lorkhan is a thing to the Reach folk, and he's the reason why the world is so difficult, but they wouldn't have it any other way.
Right. They actually appreciate the challenges that he's putting them through.
Yes. Yes. In chat, Alcatraz just asked a question. So the Reachmen are the ones going around saying Periyai is a dragon. They are one of the groups. I think there are other groups that see him as dragon-like, if I recall. I can't pull it off the top of my head right now, but that's worth looking up.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing that it's not totally unique to them.
Right, right. So the final paragraph in this whole thing, Lork supposedly, and this part is the part that is most interesting and ties into some of those theories that I've kind of put out there or just kind of played with. And again, theories are just theories. It doesn't mean I firmly believe these things to be true, but it seems like it would be cool if there was more evidence for them. Well, the idea that Lorcan may be somebody like Maik the Liar, so walks around, maybe the player character in all of the games, those kinds of concepts are not new. Right here it says, Lork supposedly still walks among the mortals of Nirn. He appears only once in a great while, braving the pain and sorrow of the cruel world he created to aid the Reachfolk in times of desperate need. My research indicates that the dreaded Briarheart ritual may have begun as a reflection of that immortal sacrifice. So, first thing here, clearly, when I played Skyrim, at least last time I played Skyrim, I must not have been Lorcan because I did not do nice things for the Reachfolk at all. I killed a bunch of them because that's what the quest said to do. So
well, maybe you're just weeding out the weak ones.
Maybe that's it. But also the Briarheart thing, this idea of like they want to be more like this deity that they respect and worship. And so if they can find a path towards immortality by becoming a Briarheart, then they get that, I guess. That's a goal.
That's brutal.
Yeah. Would you do that? I mean, they've got that big old hole in their chest.
I'm going to take a pass on the Briarheart being carved out and then grown in a tree. Briarheart ritual is rough. Have we ever gone into that? I feel like we did that for Halloween episode 1 year.
Yeah, it's come up. We've talked about around a lot of these ideas.
Yeah.
I don't know if we did a full episode.
It's a pretty brutal ritual where you're just... Yeah. Basically, just removing your heart. It sounds most unpleasant.
Right. And for anybody who hasn't, I don't know who this is, but for anybody who hasn't had a chance to play Skyrim yet and want to get into Skyrim and you want to play a sneaky character, you can steal their hearts right off of them.
You sure can. And it's really funny because they just fall over.
They just fall right over. Can you imagine how blind and deaf you would have to be like, do 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 do, watch the northern pass, make sure nobody comes into our camp, do 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 do, all of a sudden someone stole my heart out of my chest.
What happened to me?
Oh, and then just fall over. So there you go. The Reachfolk and their primary deities. Now, this doesn't mean that they don't worship other Daedric princes. Meirud's Dagon is one that comes up on occasion, but these documents focus primarily on these Daedric princes and Lorcan as being the thing that connects a lot of the Reachfolk together and
their
creates
focal points.
Yeah, kind of a unity among a group that's not particularly unified.
Sure.
You can think of it like that. So any final thoughts on this, Lotus?
So this was actually one that when we were looking into what to cover next, I knew some, but this one I was really interested in finding out about because a lot of this was kind of newer to me because the only experience I had with it was, well, the stuff they talk about it to a degree in Skyrim, but like, you know, the Markarth expansion and stuff. But a lot of this, you know, you've got to kind of delve into the books for this stuff. And hadn't as much. So it's kind of interesting because there's not as many there are definitely tribal groups type of thing. But it's kind of interesting because this is one of the, I don't want to say lesser groups, but lesser known groups in a lot of ways in the series.
Yeah, but among the people who do know about them, they're fairly popular. A lot of people tend to really like the Reach. And I think it has to do with kind of that like hardship, like, oh, they're tough and they make it through the world. And the world is difficult kind of thing. And they don't just feel like other Nords or anything like that. They're distinctly their own tribe for sure.
Yep.
So there you go. That's the Reachfolk and some of their worship. Now, this doesn't go into a concept of like a creation story or anything like that that we've been talking about in previous episodes recently, but it does delve into who they worship and why and their perspectives on those deities, which is interesting because not every group views the same individual powerful beings the same way. They all kind of come at it from different angles depending on what's most important to those groups. So it's another one of those themes that just keeps on coming. Like each powerful being is viewed distinctly different by groups based on their own perspectives. So
right,
cool stuff. Well,
no universal truce.
Yeah, so we're gonna take a quick break here for the middle. Don't go anywhere. We have Wasteland Oni, who was not able to join us for our patron chat last time, who sent us their character. So we're going to go over that, and we've got to thank our patrons and all that stuff. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, Lotus, you ready to hear Wasteland Oni's character?
Let's do it.
All right, here, check this out.
Hey there, Wasteland Oni here, and I'm here to give you guys my Elder Scrolls tabletop D&D character. So I've actually already got characters set up because I am obsessed with D&D Beyond and making characters. Anyway, so I'm doing Stings Like Serpent, who is an Argonian Arcanist Warlock. He has 16 Constitution, 15 Charisma, 14 Dexterity, 15 Wisdom, 13 Intelligence, and 11 Strength. These are all stats I pre-rolled when I made this character.
So just to pause it real quick here, Oni did this in D&D rather than in the system that we used before. But it, again, the specific details of the numbers, because we weren't actually playing, doesn't matter so much as what the numbers mean. So
I just find it funny that they already had this like set up.
Yeah. So it keeps going. Here we go.
He's a champion of Hemaeus Mora, hence why he's also a warlock. It makes sense. And he wields daggers. His personality traits are: I aim to read every book, learn every secret, and assist my prince finding every lost secret. Ideals, knowledge, the path to power, and self-improvement is through knowledge. Bonds, I sold my soul for knowledge. I hope to do great deeds and prove my worth to my prince. And flaws, I am easily distracted by the promise of information and will attempt nearly anything to get my hands on it. He's also got a Watchling Companion, which was gifted to him by Hemaeus Mora. It's a Watchling named Horalag, and it basically just acts as a gateway between him and Hemaeus Mora to relay information. So yeah, that's my character, and if anyone's interested in actually looking at the character sheet, like in person, I'll actually link that into the Discord. So yeah. Thanks for letting me record this, Tom, and I hope you all have a great day.
So what do you think, Lotus?
That was great. And I mean, you know that I'm immediately a fan of anybody that's going to be on.
Wait, what? I thought you weren't going to like this character. I mean, Hermes Mora and knowledge and all that
stuff. How weird would that be if I was like, oh man, no, I'm totally opposed to this character.
Oh, this one sucks. Thank you, Oni, for that. That's fun that you already have these characters all set up.
I know, you're just that it's just already prepped, and I'm like trying to figure out how it works, and they've got it already like, oh no, I've got a whole bunch. It's just like perfect.
Yeah. So good stuff. So thank you for sending that in. And who knows, maybe we'll end up playing a little one shots with our patrons. That could be a lot of fun. I'll have to dig a little bit deeper into the actual system and see if I can't get that.
We'll have to definitely figure that out, because we would also need more than an hour for that. So
unless we did like quick little one shots,
like a real quick one shot, maybe. I'm not experienced enough in this to know how any of this would work.
You could do an hour. It would just have to be like, it'd have to be like
focused.
We'd have to be
a focused
on it
hour
and focused. Yeah, it was like get to it and yeah. So anyway, maybe that'll be a thing. But we also have to thank our patrons. Oh, don't go anywhere also, because we've got the random page, and I hit the random page and I was like, what? This? No way.
Random even for us?
No, it feels intentional, but I just hit the random button.
That's even better.
Yeah. So, okay. So, but real quick, thank you to our patrons, Max B and Chris C, for signing up this last week. Welcome to the Patreon. Thank you for being here. Hope you're enjoying the ad-free episodes and all the other stuff you get on Patreon. Also, I have to shout out our Daedric Princes, Austin B, Baron Von Gingy, Blinding Vision, Hersine, Kira C, and Peter R. Thank you so much for your continued support. You get shout outs every week. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts with 5 stars, and we'll read it on a future episode. I don't have any new ones this week, but who knows? If you leave one right now, it might be the next one I read. All right. Are you ready for the random page?
All right. How random is it?
Well, here's the category.
You could just say thing. It's really random, because I have the random button. But
it is 100% random, but it feels like I did this intentionally, and I promise I didn't. I didn't even have it set until we did the break, and then I just hit the random button right then, you probably could have seen my face while I was looking at the screen if you're watching the video when I went, oh, okay.
So I don't actually know what this is, so I would find it funny if it's the actual document we were reading.
It's the same exact document. No, that could be, but no, it's not. Okay. All right.
So I was going to say, that would be the greatest whoops ever.
That would be amazing. All right, so this is under lore, people, O, as in names that start with O. The name is Ovra. Vatishran Ovra was one of the Reach Folk historians and storytellers active in the second era of 582.
Yeah.
What?
They're outside Vatishran Hollows, which is the Markarth expansion solo dungeon trial experience thing.
Right. As a Reach Folk historian and storyteller. This is exactly what we've been talking about in this episode.
That is really on the nose.
Yeah. During the period of the interregnum, she was the keeper of the tale of the meeting between Rada Al-Saran and Red Eagle and the custodian of the sacred cave underneath Red Eagle Redoubt. Is that, I don't know, readout's one of those words I always feel I'm mispronouncing. Readout's
such a strange word.
Redoubt. Yeah. there's a whole article here about Ovra. Reach Folk's historian and storyteller. Random, so random, it felt like I did it intentionally. But
yeah, I was going to say, if I wasn't part of the show, I might call you a liar.
it's 100% real. So,
the thing about being incredibly random is sometimes it's going to actually align with that's part of the randomness.
Right. Yeah. If you've been watching this show or listening to the show long enough, you will know that most of the time the random button is totally random. It's just
completely
like the weirdest thing.
Incoherent to what we're talking about.
Like, here's a rock on this side of Daggerfall. And it's like, cool, I guess.
Great. Okay.
Okay. But then sometimes
its coordinates are, I dicked awesome.
Right. But sometimes we get this. So very, very cool stuff. Yeah. And if you haven't played through that part of ESO, go check it out. There's a bunch of Reach stuff. It's really cool.
That for anybody that does play ESO, other than the Markarth expansion, being a very well done expansion, it was the first time that Wes Johnson had returned ESO as a voice actor.
Yeah.
But if you enjoy any type of challenges, and you can obviously put it to whatever difficulty you feel appropriate, Vatishran Hollows is actually like a really cool experience, and it's only for one player, so you don't need a group to do it. It's designed for a solo instance, so it's one of those things people are often like, oh, do I need people to play ESO with? You can, but not always, and that one requires only one person. You can't go in as a group.
Mm-hmm. Yep, except for very specific content. You can do almost everything by yourself.
Yeah, I'd say about 97% of the game can be soloed.
Yeah. So there you go. So go check that out. Lotus, thank you for joining me again. Chat, thank you for being here. We're going to wrap up the episode. This was another fun one. I've been having fun with these, the gods and creation and all that stuff. If you have some ideas, if there's questions you have about other stuff that you want us to cover while we're still kind of doing this gods and theology creation kind of, stint, let us know, because there's a lot of things that we've touched on. We've talked about the Khymer turning into the Dunmer. We've talked about the worship of the Daedric princes by them. We've talked a little bit about the orcs and, those other lesser known groups like goblins, which are actually kind of people, even kind of like the orcs used to be people before they were playable.
I was going to say, back before the orcs and Argonians were really designed into actual full races. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we've kind of touched on a lot of these things. Some of that stuff we've done individual episodes for, but there's a lot of stuff that gets referenced when we're talking about one thing, and it just kind of comes up because it's tangentially related, but we haven't done a whole episode on it. So if there's something that you're like, oh, I really wish you guys would delve a little bit deeper into this, let us know. Comment on, if you're watching the video, if you're on our Discord, if you're on the Patreon, comment on the episode. Let us know what you would like us to dig a little bit deeper into, and we'll do that. But Lotus, you have anything else you want to share before we head out?
Not really. We're actually working on getting another episode of Tales. We're kind of on our little in-between week thing, but we're actually working on getting something set up for this weekend. And also, for anybody interested in tangentially related stuff, I was going to say QuakeCon has just started from when we're recording this.
Hexen Heretic Remaster.
be getting my limited run physical edition of that.
The only people who know what this even is are like our ages or older.
Yeah, no, I am totally a boomer shooter dude. That's my thing. Like, yeah. So, Night Dive Studios is quickly becoming one of my like all-time favorite studios because they just put out banger remaster after banger remaster, and I love it.
Yeah, so these were games that were designed on the original Doom engine back in the mid-90s.
Yeah, the build engine, yep.
And people played Doom, they loved it, Demons and those kinds of things, and so Heretic and Hexen were released within the next few years after Doom 1, I believe. And they delved into more of the occult and like casting spells and doing that kind of stuff.
Got a lot of medieval stuff, very high fantasy type of setting.
Like dark, almost Diablo-ish in its like.
Very Diablo-y. Yeah, no, for sure.
Darky vibes? That's not a word.
That absolutely is.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, though. No, if you like the old style type of shooters, I would definitely check this out, but I'm very excited just to see what QuakeCon has. Sometimes, you know, because it's more of like BethesdaCon, QuakeCon's just a super cool name, I think, and that's the only reason they keep it, because it doesn't even have that much to do with Quake recently.
Yeah, back in the day, it was where you would go if you wanted to play Quake against a bunch of other people on a LAN, because the internet was too laggy and slow in the late 90s. Right. That's where it came from.
But at the same time, you'll see a lot of Bethesda-related stuff, i.e. the Elder Scrolls. So check it out. If you do play ESO, they're running a whole bunch of sales in you know, as a result of the QuakeCon event as well. But,
and across the rest of the Bethesda catalogs. Like, there's a lot.
Actually,
not just ESO stuff.
I think all of Bethesda's catalog in one way or another is even having sales on DLC, or it's just, like, sales on the games themselves.
Yeah.
So it's worth checking out.
Yep. Go pick up some stuff if you want it. Now would be a good time for that. And
get it cheap.
Yeah, get it cheap. I've got my stuff. You guys know how my stuff goes. Robotsradio.net for all the shows on the network. I also do the Fallout Lorecast and the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. Cooking up some fun stuff that I can't really reveal yet, but another fun thing that I think is going to resonate with the majority of our audience. I really think that there's going to be a lot of people who are like, oh, that sounds like a really cool thing. So stay tuned for that. New updates in the future. If you would like to join the network, you can join us. Go to robotsradio.net, look up the Rocket Club. There's a page there. And if you'd like to start a podcast and you want some guidance on how to do that, join us. There's lots of people. We've had like 4 new members in the last 2 months. A lot of people have been signing up and I've been helping them launch their shows. So it's a thing that you can do if you want to do that. Otherwise, we will be back next week with some more spicy lore details and things. So make sure you check back in the future. And until next time, if Hircine shows up and says, you got to get out there and hunt, maybe you should, because it'll make you stronger.
Just do it.
There's no drawbacks to that. It's fine.
No, I'm sure nothing bad would happen.
Nothing bad at all. And if you happen to turn into a werewolf, then your tribe will appreciate you anyway. So don't even worry about it.
It's win-win.
Win-win. That's what we're saying.
Unless you're the prey, and then it's pretty much just guaranteed lose.
Shh. We don't talk about that.
Oh, forget that part.
Okay, bye, everybody. I'll see you later. Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.